Welcome to Music Fishbowl.
Hello everyone, welcome to Music Fishbowl, music chatter for all. It's Dan here again, as per usual every week. Right, today, great episode coming up for you. I've got a member of the vinyl community guesting on my podcast. His name is James and he's at Perfectly Pop on Instagram. That's at Perfectly Pop. We're going to chat loads of stuff. We're going to talk about our favourite records in our collection. We're going to talk about pop music because he's a big pop fan. Country music as well because we both have a big love of country. And we're going to talk all sorts. So it's going to be a really great chat. Well, I've already had the chat. I know how good it's going to be. Obviously, apologies again, like last week, for the poorer audio quality on my end. Reason being is that obviously when I record with a guest, I have to use my iPad as Spotify's host doesn't allow me to use my laptop to do it with my actual microphone. So I am stuck to use the standard microphone that comes on the iPad. So it's a bit unfortunate, but just is what it is. And, you know, providing the content's good, that's all that really matters. So I'm hoping the content's good for you and that you'll enjoy it. Thank you to everyone who had the love for the last episode. It was so good. It's done really well, performed great with the numbers as well. So I'm really happy with that. And you know, I got a chance to interview an artist that I really like at the moment. So that was great. Fumes and PJ Vice and Charlie and Kalmar, thank you all for coming on because you were great guests as well. And that was fantastic. Obviously, I am looking for other guests too as we go on. So I do need people just to DM me if you want to be a guest. Just send me a DM on @thisisvinyl.tap. That's @thisisvinyl.tap. The dot is a full stop, obviously. You can find me on Instagram under that. You can also email the podcast at musicfishbowl123@gmail.com. That's musicfishbowl123@gmail.com. And if you can email us there, just say you want to be a guest, do feel free to come on. The same places as well. Send us questions for the podcast. You know, I take audience questions now, do one a week. Audience question about music, and I just discuss what I think the answer should be for me. Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, we discussed whether new wave music, whether that's actually considered to be classic rock or not, which is quite interesting. That was interesting as a conversation. Actually, I went on for about 10 minutes about that, so that was really, really good one, actually, somebody asked me. We're going to get straight into this interview, I think, because it's just that good. I want you all to hear it. So here's James at Perfectly Pop on Instagram with a great conversation. Yeah, you're going to hear that now. Hello everyone, welcome back. I am here with the previously mentioned James from @PerfectlyPop on Instagram. Many of you listeners may actually already know him because I know a lot of my listeners are from the vinyl community, and he has got a brilliant account on Instagram where he shows off all his records, and he's got a fantastic collection, loads of coloured records and everything as well, which is always great to see. Welcome James to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
No worries, no, thank you for coming on as always to every guest I have. I'd like to start off then. Let's start off our podcast. I usually, when I get someone from the vinyl community on, I usually ask them what kind of music was playing when they were young, just to see where they started out and then see how they got into music and things like that.
I remember when I was young hearing ABBA. My parents had the vinyl. So lots and lots of ABBA when I was younger, and I quite liked vinyl even when the CD phase came through. Obviously it sort of died a bit of a death, but I was quite happy to see it get a bit of a resurgence and started back in sort of mid 2010s, I think.
So it's a similar period to when I started collecting, because I think I was 13 when I bought my first vinyl, and that would have been 2011. So this is before vinyl kind of came back. Do you remember going to charity shops and getting everything really cheap?
No, I actually don't do the charity haul stuff
really,
as much as perhaps I should. I do feel like I miss out when I see some of the posts and they're like, oh, we got this bargain, and I get really jealous.
You know what, though? That's the creme de la creme. I when I first got into collecting records as I say, in 2011, it's before the resurgence. So used to go in there, and I some of the records I got there now are worth
£40+, just the original presses of you know, some of the later Bryan Adams stuff, as in, you know, getting into the '90s and things like that, just because people were just throwing it away and just giving it away.
Yeah, I think save space, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And then now it's valuable. They're now selling instead. So I wouldn't bother going to charity shops now. I would say one in every 50 charity shops you'll find something you want. Unless you're into like 12 inches of 80s pop music so much.
Oh,
I used to collect a lot of that, but I don't anymore. So
yeah, I think eBay and Discogs are the way to go. I'm not sure if we can shout those out, but that you do get some good bargains on there very occasionally.
Yeah, I know. No, I totally agree. So you're growing up, you know, obviously listening to ABBA at home and things like that. And then obviously moving forward, what's the kind of genre that you're most into? What do you most collect? Those kind of things. Let listeners know.
The obvious one is the pop, really. I'm very vocal about being a pop lover. And I do think that there's two kind of definitions, because pop, automatically people think popular, but then artists who perhaps aren't exactly mainstream anymore, certainly in the UK, like Steps, etc., they would struggle to get top 40 singles, but they're certainly still defined as pop. So there's a very sort of two-pronged definition of pop, and I think I fit in both, really.
Yeah, I actually agree with that, you know, and I think now we've got something. It's a genre that I've coined and termed myself. So I do feel slightly big-headed about this genre, a little bit up my own backside about it. But I think mature pop is a really good way of describing what Harry Styles is doing now, what Taylor Swift is doing now, because it's pop for adults,
yes,
not for teens,
yeah,
as well, which I really like. And you can even go down to people like Olivia Rodrigo, although she is pretty much a teeny bopper artist, actually what she's singing about, and if you get to the crux of it, these are adult themes, right? So
I was talking exactly the same kind of topic about this to a colleague of mine. He's just under 30, I'm just over 30, and we were both saying that Olivia Rodrigo, whilst very much sort of hits that teeny bopper kind of, a lot of our teenagers like them, there is something there for the adults as well. There is relatable stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's funny, because when you look back at the artists who are doing this more mature thing, I always find that they all came from a massive teenage fan base background as well. Like Taylor Swift is a brilliant example, and Harry Styles coming from One Direction as well. You know, and they were, when they were first popular, was when I would have been about between the ages of 12 to, well, when 1989 came out, I think I was 17 turning 18, so you know, I was still technically a teenager, but then predominantly it was all teenage sort of stuff, and then now it's just so much more developed. So you listen back to some of those older records that the artists did, especially Taylor Swift, because she's been solo for so long. You know, she's never been in a band or anything, has she? Whilst One Direction's a bit different for Harry, yeah, Styles, because obviously he's breaking out. Yeah, when you listen back, sometimes it just seems so primitive. When you listen to what she's doing now, it's like, wow.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
But yeah, no, so you would say you predominantly collect pop music as well, and that's what's on your account?
There is a bit of country. I have to import quite a few American country artists, usually the female ones. I won't go too political, but the female ones are a lot, generally speaking, more tolerant. I do have kind of dabble in other areas, but nothing as specific as pop, really.
Yeah, I mean, I've noticed with country music as well. I'm sure are you around Tomato Gate? Do you know all about that?
Possibly, go on.
So Tomato Gate's the idea where the female artists, and this is statistically a thing, unless your name is Reba Carey, or was at the time, we're talking back, you know, mid 2010s, it would be Reba, Carrie, Taylor, Miranda, and might be one more, I can't remember now, but unless you're Martina, might be Martina from Martina McBride, unless that was your name, you hadn't had a number one, I think it was a debut number one hit single. No other female country artist for about 20 years that actually had a debut number one hit single other than them.
Yeah,
that, compared to the male side, yeah, it was terribly in favour to them. And also the stats of radio play fully skewing male artists over females.
100%. And also the country to country festival that they have over here. I mean, generally speaking, I quite like it, but I can't argue with the fact that it's very, even now, still male orientated, male heavy headliners. So.
And the irony of that, I mean, I don't know if you're around the gigging scene in the UK, and this is a conversation I've had on Reddit with American country fans. When you get into the conversation of who's more popular, who pulls the biggest crowds, male or female artists? Obviously, the US, it's always the male artists.
Yes.
And a lot of the country fans complain about that over there. And I say, well, you should come to the UK, because the female artists, 100% of the time, provided you're going to independent country music acts, you're going to see 10 times bigger crowds of them, to the point where actually the only time you really see male country acts, unless they have some kind of kudos on them, actually headlining, well, they don't. They support. The only time you see them is supporting a female artist, which is where I think that I think the British country audience is just a lot better at actually, you know, supporting female artists.
But actually, I think the UK are generally speaking a little bit better than that anyway. I don't want to annoy or offend any international listeners, but I do feel and similarly, to go into the sort of ageist conversation, you know, people like Kylie and Madonna as well, I feel like we are a lot more tolerant. There's still ways to go, but I think we here in the UK are a lot more tolerant of older generation artists than sort of compared to the rest of the world, maybe.
Yeah, I think so as well. I mean, it's not dissing on other countries or anything. It's praising the UK for just being so ahead of the game, basically.
Yes.
I think. And I totally agree with that. I mean, look at the you know what they call legacy artists in the USA or around the world. We don't necessarily that term legacy artists. I hadn't heard it until I heard it online. Because we just don't use the term legacy artist, you know, and I think it's possibly due to probably, let's say, the UK's number one export, Paul McCartney, being so culturally relevant all the time and constantly keeping up with the time as well.
Yeah.
I think it's due to things like that, because the US equivalent is Bob Dylan, pretty much, because he's the cultural figure. Over here, he had more chart success, but in the US, he became a cultural figure. Whilst we don't have that with him here, but we have it with Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
So it's almost like the equivalence there. It's just that Bob Dylan does his own thing and just does what he wants, whilst Paul McCartney does keep up with the times. And I think that partially, I'm not just saying it's all due to that, it's not, there's so much more, but I think that's partially key to it as well, is that we do have these older artists who actually do keep up with it. I mean, Kylie's another great example, and I know she's not British, but honorary British, right? A bit like Brian Adams.
Definitely honorary British.
Honorary British for Brian Adams too, you know, like you take these, I know Brian Adams isn't one that keeps up with the times, but Kylie definitely does. I think we do have a lot more respect for them. I mean, look how big the Stones album's been over here.
Exactly.
Isn't it? Yeah, no. I'm very interested to see how you actually got into country music and things, because I don't get to talk about country music too much on the pod, and I'm a huge fan. It is the genre that I write in as a writer. It's the genre that I probably associate myself most with, other than my favorite artists being Bruce Springsteen and Bob Dylan, and these are my favorite artists, but the Beatles, but you know, as a genre, I probably have to say country. What got you so into that? Because it is, I mean, for people our age, we weren't part of the country music revolution. Well, we were, I guess we were part of it, but we weren't. It wasn't a thing when we first got into it, if that makes sense. We were the ones who kind of created it, I guess.
I'm very lucky that I've been to the States a few times. And obviously it is everywhere over there. They have not just one dedicated radio station. They have numerous everywhere.
Yeah.
That was a big sort of starting point. It sort of ran through my family. I mean, I know I say ABBA, but my grandparents loved country a lot. That sort of filtered down to other members of the family. My brother is a lot bigger on country than I am. So way back when, I'd hear him listening to Carrie, etc. And then I'd be like, oh, I like that one. I like that one. And I've suddenly, you know, started to like particular ones, not as many as he has, but the artists are sort of coming, filtering through for me when he recommends them.
Yeah, exactly. I found it through... For me, it was slightly different, because I found it through browsing on the internet one day. for some strange reason that you know, I know Garth doesn't let any of his music get onto any online platform apart from Amazon now. I think he's allowed it on, but back then obviously it wasn't. Somehow a Garth song leaked on YouTube, and I listened to that and I went, oh, I really like this. I bought a Garth Brooks CD so I could actually hear him properly. Heard that, I really like this. So I got into 90s country, and then it developed further into, I mean, I already sort of knew some of the classic country anyway. I knew Johnny Cash, and I liked that stuff anyway. Yeah. But that's part of being by the by a music fan, really. But then I really got into the newer stuff, and now it's pushed on. When I first got Spotify in 2020, which obviously is really quite late, but I got it in 2020, I started then listening to people like Tyler Childers, Charlie Crockett, and all these 49 Winchester, like these indie country acts as well, and these, you know, the ones who are a bit more traditional maybe, or neo trad, or even outlaw. You know, I absolutely love who's one I've been listening to a lot lately, Joshua Headley. I love Joshua Headley. I've been listening to him a lot. So like, yeah, it's totally, it just grows, and you realise actually there's so many subgenres as well. Like,
yeah, so absolutely, and. There. And another thought that I just had while you were talking then was the country station on Grand Theft Auto as well. That was another sort of eye opener. I don't think any of the artists you've mentioned were on there. It was a very traditional country station. But again, that sort of exposed me to country, and I'd always try and either put that or the pop channel on. So I think even sort of back then, back in the day, I won't say my age, but when I was easily influenced, let's say, the country and the pop channels were the two that I would find on that game. So
yeah, that's what I always found with the Grand Theft Auto games as well. I came to Grand Theft Auto a bit late because I wasn't allowed to have them until I was the right age, but playing them at my friend's house, my friend used to play the country one all the time because it just felt more authentic to him. But that's where I discovered like George Strait. Because San Andreas had "All My Exes Live in Texas,"
and it brilliant wasn't song.
Even, I know, but it wasn't even George Strait's version. I think it was a cover.
Was it?
I think I googled it and I found the original. And then years later, when I was playing the game on my iPad, because they released them all as apps, I found out it was, I think it is a cover, the one that they use on.
Oh, I didn't even realise.
Yeah, you'll find with a few of the ones on Grand Theft Auto, some of the famous songs end up being covers because they don't get the money to license, especially on the earlier Grand Theft Auto games, the money to license the songs is quite high. I discovered George Strait through that. And obviously, you know, I didn't really know more than All My Exes until my dad went to Texas on business. And this is when I first got into country music. He started asking around, getting some feelers. And like, they basically said George Strait and Miranda Lambert, but that's because they're both Texans and they love them because of that. That's when I was like, then I realised how big George Strait actually was. It was like, oh, which is weird because you're like, okay, so Garth Brooks in the UK, for us as people from the UK, we're like, okay, we know him, we know he's big in Ireland, but George Strait doesn't really travel as much, even though he's had a lot of success in Ireland, not so much in the UK as much, and you know, but he's huge, he's bigger, he's the biggest. Like,
there is in Ireland quite a there is quite a lot of country scene in Ireland. One of the country to country festivals I went to was the Irish one, and I've got to give it credit, it was certainly more than the Scotland one for definite.
Oh yeah, I can imagine, because I mean there's so much more. I mean they got their own scene and it's massive.
Yeah,
you know, like Nathan Carter sells out stadiums in Ireland. Like, he's huge. Like, these artists are massive over there. But yeah, like, I honestly, like, so actually let's move on, because we've been talking about favorite genres and things. Let's talk about then, who's your favorite artist
in the country genre?
Anywhere. Yeah, let's go country and of all time.
Okay, so country, I think I'm split between two. I think I'm going to go Little Big Town and Kelsey Ballerini.
I was gutted I didn't get to see her. I missed out on tickets, by the way. I was going to Shepherd's Bush Empire. I was like, I was going to go.
I went to Birmingham. She was honestly amazing. I loved it. Sorry to rub that in. But she was very, very good.
Yeah.
Little Big Town, another one that I've supported sort of very long term. Yeah, I've liked them since sort of way back when, Tornado, Pontoon kind of days.
They lost me a bit with Nightfall, but they brought me back with their latest Mr. Sun. So yeah, really happy with the direction that they're currently going in. Sort of overall, my number one forever love would be the Spice Girls. But I'm currently very, very much on the Kylie Minogue train. So
yeah, to be honest, all of those artists I get behind. I enjoy their music, you know, all the way through. It's funny actually because I went through a bit of a Kylie phase at one point as well. Just listening, but I was surprised at how much I enjoyed the later stuff. Really surprised at how much I enjoyed, like, you know, the 2010s. And I don't know why, but I just did.
I think with Disco and Golden, she went very much.
I like Golden.
Genre specific, yeah, because it's got that country kind of vibe to it, hasn't
exactly.
it? But what I do like about the latest Tension is that there's quite a mixture of everything. It's like sort of Kylie of old, if you like.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I still need to listen to the new record, actually. I haven't got around to it. Is it any good?
I really like it. And I think that the more I've listened to it, the more different songs have grown in appeal, changed in appeal. I could go on about it for hours. So I'll probably talk to you after this about it.
Yeah, no, I tell you what, a pop artist I do really like, and I don't think it's mentioned enough, Louise.
Louise.
I like Eternal as well. If we're going to talk like 90s pop, Eternal and Louise, I really like them as well. Yes, I actually really quite liked her comeback record, even though it wasn't that good, but I quite liked it. Something about it I really enjoyed.
No, it wasn't as terrible. The problem is, I think that a lot of people just think that, and I think people thought this was Steps, that they were going to come back and they were still going to be very 90s. And I think that both they, Louise and Steps, and to an extent Bananarama, have done very well at keeping their core audience while also making it modern, fresh, etc.
The resurgence of Bananarama, has been incredible to watch.
I love them.
I know. Yeah, that's been so. Oh, the quality of the music. Honestly, I don't. If I put on some pop and I put on something like Bananarama, I won't put on one of their early albums. I just won't do it now. I just put on the newer ones with them. I haven't got the time to listen to the older stuff anymore. I just put on the good stuff, and I really enjoy the new stuff more.
I really like their debut, I have to say.
There's a little bit of new wave and stuff.
It is, and I do, I'm a little bit of that on the quiet as well, just a little bit. I don't think I could have as lengthy a conversation about new wave as I have country and pop, but I'm certainly not against it. Again, Grand Theft Auto helped there. But I love, it's really gonna, I can tell you that it's the blue cover. I think it's Viva. I can't remember. Call me a fan now and I've totally forgot the name of their album. But it's the one they cover Rapture on. I don't know. I can't remember. I'm going to say it's Viva.
Viva. That's Viva. Yeah. I've got it. I Googled it quickly for you. Is that a cover of Blondie? Is it?
No, it's a cover. It's a cover of the dance song from the early noughties.
Oh, yeah, I know the one. Yeah.
And that's really good as well. But I think that whole album as a whole is really, really strong.
Yeah.
I really like that one. That's a really good one. But I also love Hypnotic Tango from Drama. That's a really, really good song as well.
I almost saw them on tour, but their tour prices are so, like, if you think, like, I think Louise went on tour when she came back and it was like £35-40 a ticket. Their prices were like 70, 80. And you're like, what? Whoa. I mean, I know they're doing small venues, so it was quite exclusive. They didn't do big venues for a while, or larger venues, should I say, for a while. But I was like, I can't justify paying that to go see them.
I haven't seen them yet, but as soon as they do something a little bit more local, I'll definitely be there this time, especially seeing as Greatest Hits. Well, I say Greatest Hits, the new glorious collection. That's the latest one. So I'm sure they'll do a few shows in support of that, and I'll be there hopefully.
Oh yeah, they got to. I mean, especially because it would be a Greatest Hits show, wouldn't it? As well.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know, they're definitely going to do everything you want to hear as well. But you know, what's your favourite song of all time? Let's move on to that.
Oh, I can't. I don't think I can. I don't think I can. I'll tell you what, I'll just think of random songs throughout the rest of this chat and drop them in. But sort of two stand out for me just then were Your Disco Needs You by Kylie, which for obvious reasons. And another one is Donna Summer, I Feel Love.
Oh, it's fantastic, isn't it? And revolutionary as well.
Absolutely. I love it. Yeah. Members of my family don't. So if I'm around them and playing it, they won't be very happy. But I absolutely love it and probably play it all the more for it, to be honest. So
you need to play an edit of it. Because it's such a long song anyway. If someone doesn't like it, play an edit, and then they'll be a lot more tune with it.
I bought that rainbow vinyl that Donna Summer bought out with just with that 16-minute version of "Love to Love You really? Baby" on it, and then on the flip side was on the B side was "I Feel Love", and I'm going to say "Hot Stuff", and I just play that one. It's enough to wind them up, really. Yeah. So
exactly. It's funny because I've had my favourite song has been my favourite song for 22 years. And, you know, I'm 26 now. So like I've literally, since I first heard it, it's pretty much been my favourite song. And it's Bruce Springsteen's Thunder Road. And it's just never changed. And I don't know why. It's always been that song. I have no problem choosing.
Mine constantly changes. I attach emotions and moods and memories to music as well, which I think which probably goes some way to explaining as well. So
it changes things, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's like I've got like songs like "Red Red Wine" by UB40. I love the song, but it always brings up the same memory of lost love and things like that. It's you know, it's always going to do that. Whilst like now. You know, now with my current girlfriend, she's always going to be like, yeah, every time I hear "Wonderful Tonight", I'm going to think of her, because that's the song that she first heard me play on guitar and sing for her. And she really enjoyed the way I did it. And it's just sort of become that, it's that moment for us together.
Yeah.
So like, that's always going to be positive. Fingers crossed, it'll always be positive. Fingers crossed, please.
Don't let her listen to this bit.
Yeah, she'll love it. She'll love it. Don't worry. She'll be so happy. She'll be like, he's mentioned me. She always likes me getting mentioned in the podcast of her at some point. But I just say I naturally do it anyway. So I don't know why you have to worry about that. It's fine. But yeah, no. Like, there's always those songs that you do attach an emotion to, and it does change the song. But yeah, no, I've somehow had the same favourite song 22 years, and even in same favorite album, very similar probably length of time as well, "Born to Run", which the album that Thunder Road is the opening track from. So it really is, I'm dead set in my ways, apparently.
I don't even think I could give you a favorite album, simply because I think it changes all the time. No, again, I'd have to think about that one. I just like a lot of everything. Obviously, I've got my go-tos, you know, the Spice Girls, Kylie, ABBA, and you know, they won't ever change. But as to whether there's an artist that I could listen to or a particular song or album, I don't think so, you know. I'm not sure.
Well, that's the thing. Obviously, at the moment, I'm listening to a lot of Hackney Diamonds by the Stones, because that's going to be, as someone who's a big classic rock fan, that's going to be like a huge album for me.
Yeah.
But earlier on in the year, I was listening to Hardy's The Mockingbird and the Crow like mad, because it was just such a weird fusion and fun album in so many weird ways. I don't know if you listened to it, but
I don't think so.
It's a double album. The idea, first half is country and second half is rock, and it is hard rock, as in like there's screaming and all sorts. Like it's more rocky than I'm used to, even though I'd like some metal music and things like that, but it is more rocky than I'm used to. And he sort of shows this duality between his personality in it. And the middle song is called "The Mockingbird and the Crow", was the title track, and halfway through the song it just rocks, goes from country and straight into rock, and it kind of like merges the album, so it's like a seamless transition. It's really quite clever.
But it's actually quite interesting. I didn't know of this, but I've said for a while now, I said to my brother, who I said is quite a big country fan, that there isn't, it isn't too dissimilar, those two genres anyway. No. It's just sort of the way they play the instruments, and you know, you could quite easily turn a country song into a rock song and a rock song into a country song by just changing a few of the instruments up. And I'm not gonna insult any particular artist or anything by suggesting that that's it, that's how simple it could be.
No.
But it could be, theoretically.
Yeah.
I mean, Shania's been very good over the course, certainly in the 90s, and showing how the country songs can be sort of changed ever so slightly, and all of a sudden they become pop songs, and that's how she broke the UK, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean that's she basically her and I find it funny when people say that Garth changed country in the same way he was the male equivalent of Shania, because I'm like, no. Shania, she managed to she did fusion. Garth Brooks played upbeat country. That's a difference, and that's what I think. I would not go anywhere near saying Garth Brooks was pop. It was just poppier than what was already there.
Yeah,
Shania
did the work.
Yeah, she did the fusion, and that's what's important. And I think that's what Hardy's trying to do, is he's trying to fuse together the genres he loves, because he is predominantly he's a country writer. You know, he's had so many number one hits and things as a writer, and he's now found some success as an artist himself. And obviously, he's in that same sort of group with Ernest and Morgan Wallen, who very interestingly, I don't know if you saw it, put out that new picture of his new look recently, in the last couple of days, where he looks a bit like a police officer who's going to ask you to step out of your car and ask how fast you were going.
Morgan.
Yeah, Morgan.
I'm not going to comment on him, I don't think.
I know. I always struggle with commenting on him, because it's very love-hate with him, isn't it? If you're a fan of him, like, you have to be a love-hate fan. You can't, I don't think you can enjoy him wholly. I feel like it would just be it'd be a mess if you did.
I feel like I may have slightly offended all Americans already, so I'm saying nothing on their precious boy Morgan.
I know. He's definitely a flawed. He's a flawed figure, and that's all I'll say. But he's in that same Hardy's in that same kind of group with them. But the difference between Hardy and Ernest to Morgan is that Hardy and Ernest definitely they go hard on country a lot more. Whilst Morgan will go for the pop chart success, they are more of a, we're going to make an authentic country record. And their records are just surprising people left, right, and centre. But yeah, I love the, I mean, look at Jason Aldean, right? Look at him. How many, like, My Kind of Party? That's a rock song. Let's be honest.
Yeah. And I think Sam Hunt, again, I know that he's been sort of known for other things lately, but. He even when he did the Country to Country Festival, I think in, I'm going to say 2016, it was still very rocky at that time. Like it was sort of not as country as, say, Little Big Town, Carrie, etc. It almost felt like the wrong stage for him. It was almost like he wanted to do something else with the music.
And he merges hip hop in there as well.
Yeah,
he freestyles and things like that on stage. Like I actually think he's actually an incredible artist, and I think he got so much criticism when he could, but people weren't ready. People just weren't ready. He was just ahead of the game. And what he does now, what he did in those two albums we've got so far from him, like, you look at both of them and you go, that's child's play compared to what you have now. But everyone's now saying country music's in the best place it's been. It's the most country it's been for years. And probably because the indie scene's so strong. But that's another problem, the indie scene. They get called Americana so much when they're not Americana. And that really annoyed Tyler Childers, and that's what caused him to do that speech, that awards ceremony, when he said, I ain't got nothing to do with Americana music, but I'm going to accept this Americana award from you. Like, because he's not an Americana artist. So, like, you know, it just shows how similar these genres can be, I guess. But let's talk about the collection anyway, because obviously you've got your account, which is, we're similar in following, us two as well, so similar size accounts. We've got,
yeah,
both got lots of posts on there. You've got so many great records on your account. I have to say, like, I'm jealous of quite a lot of them.
Thank you.
How big is your collection?
That's a very good question. I don't actually know, and I haven't kept my Discogs up to date, but I'm going to say maybe 400 now.
Oh, fair.
Maybe 500.
Fair. About five, yeah, that's not too bad at all. So, and you've got a lot of coloured records as well. I see. You like a limited edition buyer. If you see the limited, you go for that over the standard, or
not really. The first thing that I look at actually is the cover. That for me, there is a lot of artists, both sort of UK based or Europe, as well as international, who are generally releasing some awful front covers for their albums. And borderline, in my view, unacceptable, because I think sometimes these artists need to remember that they're going to be at the front of shops and influential young children can see these things. So, for example, I love her. I love what it stood for, but Kesha, not appropriate.
Yeah.
I... wasn't massively fond of Anne-Marie's latest aesthetic thing. Mm. The spitting out of the breakfast, the licking up the window thing. I know that there's a message behind these things, but I just let the music do the talking. I think if the music says everything you need it to say, and in both cases, they've both been very vocal in different ways about how the music has done that, let the music do that. And I'm not saying, you know, make the artwork something really superficial or, you know, just them in a innocent pink dress or whatever, because that's not them either. But remember that there are likely to be children or people triggered by those kind of, by those covers.
Yeah, I mean, I look at someone like Harry's House, and that's such a provoking album cover. Yet it's fine. There's nothing about it that's going to cause any controversy. But it provokes you to think, what is on that record? And yeah, it's the cover that made me. Because I'd always dismissed him as an artist before Harry's House came out. Since then, I've listened to the past three albums, and I've gone, well, the first album is clearly finding the sound. There's a couple of songs that sound like the Stones on there. There's a couple of songs that sound like sort of indie folk music and all sorts. There's a bit here, there, everywhere, but it's nice. All nice songs. Second album's definitely like an arty pop record. And then the third album is just this expression. It's like an opus. You know, if he doesn't improve on it, that is his opus, basically, of his career. But that cover that goes with Harry's House is just so... It just makes me think, like... what is on this album?
And I think, you know, that's why a really good album cover can make the difference, but it can all it can make or break, really. And talking of covers that break, I mean, I don't know what Cher was thinking with her Christmas cover, but I mean, I love Cher to bits. She's right up there in my, you know, in my collection, but that Christmas album was not a serve.
Yeah, I mean, Cher's one of those artists who always tries to be provocative in some way, shape, or form. As in, she wants to push the boundaries best she can. So I can see why she'll do something that's gonna push it in some way or do anything. I know she's always gonna do that. And if you look back, some of the shots of her from the '80s, like for a woman of her age at the time to be dressing that way. Look at her Greatest Hits album cover. The what's it called? Oh, it's quite a famous one with her in the lingerie sort of lying back kind of thing. That one, that's at the time when that came out, I think in the early 90s or maybe late 80s, that was quite a thought-provoking cover in the terms of it was like, well, a woman of her age dressing like that, you know, that wasn't common. Nowadays, we'd expect it because people like Madonna and herself have done that. So
yeah.
I can see why she will do thought-provoking things. Because that's shocking things, shock tactics, all sorts.
It's just shocking because it's terrible, I think. It's the, you know.
I know. That's the thing. So, terrible album covers. What I mean, there's a. I mean, let's be honest. The soundtrack, I'm looking at it now because it's in my room. The soundtrack to The Bodyguard is an awful album cover. have you seen that?
Yes.
With like the six or seven pictures of Kevin Costner all the same behind Whitney Houston. It's awful. There's so many terrible album covers, and unfortunately, they often reside in pop music, which is really sad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe it's record company.
In the fine print somewhere that every artist has got to release a dreadfully awful album cover somewhere.
I know.
What's that one? I don't know who the artist is. I don't think it's Michael Petit at all. But it's the pieces of hair that's on the soap.
Oh, I know the one. Let me look it up. Just bear with me.
Honestly,
it's a rock artist, I believe, isn't it?
Every time I see it, I just like I cringe, but not because it's horrible, just because it gets me. I don't, yeah, they knew what they were doing with that one. And there's also another one as well, it's like a monster face with the guy's contorted face like half open, and it's a bit Frankenstein's creation like, and it's got like pinky salmon.
King Crimson in the Court of the Crimson King,
is that what it is? Oh, I don't like that one either.
Like that person's post and skip past very quickly.
Because it's such a common album, it's one of those that they call it that on the Vinyl Jerk subreddit, which is where they just sort of take the mick out of, you know, like the sort of the I've just got into collecting but like they don't really fully get it and they're making mistakes. This subreddit just takes the mick out of them. But the one thing is, it's the screamy pink face man.
Because
the first two records you buy are Dark Side of the Moon and King in the Kingdom, in the Court of the Crimson King by King Crimson. So it's always those two you buy.
I feel like the Pop Lover tab is greatest hits, and I'm not going to lie, that was definitely in my first five, I think, when I started recollecting.
What was the first record you ever bought? What was the first you bought?
I knew you were going to ask me this question, and I've been trying to think about this all week since I said that I'd come on here, and I'm gonna say if it wasn't the ABBA one, I'm stuck between two. It was either the Little Mix Pink Glory Days that was record store exclusive, or, and this is really random and I don't know where it sort of came from or where it happened, but I was in a supermarket in France on a trip with work and saw Celine Dion's Love Me Back to Life, and I thought, oh, I've not seen that in the UK. I'm going to buy it, and bought it there and then, and then took it back home.
Yeah.
And that was definitely one of the first as well, because I don't think that's widely available now. So that was definitely a good purchase at the time.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, sort of ABBA, Little Mix, Celine. And I think those were the first sort of three. Maybe Spice.
That would be another obvious first one. But yeah,
certainly one of those. I just can't remember which specific one it was.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I had because I always try and go with the one I used with my own, the one I first one I bought with my own money, because the first CD I owned was the Beatles Number Ones, which was my grandma bought me that when I was a really young child. Mm-hmm. But with my own money, the first CD I ever bought was Abbey Road for the Beatles, which is quite a good one to have. Less so good was my vinyl. Which was, it's not lesser good because it's a fantastic album. It's really good by a really good band, and it's True by Spandau Ballet. That was the first vinyl I bought.
I don't think that's terrible one at all.
No, I don't think so either. And also it's not something I have in my collection now, because I've definitely fine-tuned, because you keep buying and then you run out of space. So I'll fine-tune now that I'm pretty much classic rock, mainly country. There's a little bit of pop in there, not too much, but it's classic rock, the blues, country, bit of soul, bit of punk, that kind of thing. But more on the rock side now for my collection. So I don't have it anymore, but I used to have about four or five Spandau Ballet records, I used to have quite a lot. So yeah, they're so good.
As long as you get the new Kylie one, that's absolutely fine.
Well, I've got to listen to it first anyway. I still haven't listened to it yet.
No, well, how about you buy it and listen to it on the turntable?
Yeah, I mean, those are variants of it I've seen as well, isn't there? It's like,
yeah, absolutely.
Umpteen, is that the word?
umpteen colours. Well, I'm still hoping that she releases a deluxe version. All the versions that she's released so far have been standard editions, so all the bonus tracks aren't on vinyl yet, but we're hoping. Well, I'm hoping.
Yeah, I mean, she did that with her what's it, disco album. I mean,
yes, she did.
Like,
yeah,
a load of remixes and things, and that's been cheap on Amazon for ages.
Yes,
I think you pick up like £7.
Yeah, please don't remind me, because that's that's an awful price when you buy these things first week.
I know. It happened to me. Right, I recently spent. I will say it's a three digit figure, and I'm not going to lie. Most of the records I buy, £5 or under, because I'm one of those people who goes hunting. And I hunt for the value. And I don't mind lower grade as long as the disc plays. And I clean up the disc. I try and restore things best I can. I'm one of those people. Especially when it's classic rock. You're never going to get the best, because they're not the newest albums in the world. But obviously, I bought Bob Dylan's Christmas in the Heart, which is a really rare vinyl to get. 3 weeks later, they repressed it. £21.99.
Isn't it always the way?
And I paid a three-digit figure. And I've never done that. The most I paid for a record before was £40. £40 the most I paid before, but hey-ho.
I paid quite a lot. I wouldn't quite say three figures, but I imported Rihanna's Loud on pink vinyl. And I knew that the standard black pressing was available in the UK, but I just felt that for that album, I needed to have the baby pink. So I spent a bit more than I should. I'm not going to go into numbers just in case family are listening. And then literally a week after it arrived, they announced that they were releasing them through the usual UK places at something like £40, and I was furious. So I did lose out on that one.
Yeah, it's part and parcel, isn't it? Like, most of the time you win, most of the time you are a winner, but yes, there is a time, there will be two or three times every few years where you just don't, and you lose out. Like, even if it's just like, oh, you spent a tenner and bought it out of the main bins at a record shop, and then it was, you go back 3 weeks later and they have a copy of it for a pound in that pound box, or in for a fiver. Like, that happens, right?
You just see it does happen.
Yeah, it's exactly. So it's like, you know, my girlfriend today almost bought a copy of Hard Day's Night just because she likes the cover and wants to display it for a tenner, which is good anyway. That's good. But literally the week before I saw him, he had it, the same record shop owner had it for a pound in the pound box, and yep, I didn't pick it up because I didn't know she wanted it. Now I know, I'm on the lookout. So, you know, you do me this. I told her, don't buy it, because I reckon we can get that cheap for a pound quite easy, because Beatles records in the UK, there's so many of them, and so many of them are poor grade. It's not like in the US where they're a little bit harder to come by.
Exactly.
You know, in the UK, it's fine. So anyway, what I'll do, I mean, let's wrap it up around there then. Let's finish off with saying what the most interesting, or the one record you want to give a shout out to in your collection, what would that be?
Oh, don't put me on the spot like this. What have I got that? Oh, I don't know. You might have to edit something in after. Just because it took me a long time to get it, and I got it at a really good price, and you can't find it at this price now, certainly not for this colour.
The white original pressing of Kylie Christmas, I think, was...
nice.
Is a really... And with the wrapping paper as well, so that was a really... Oh, and I'll tell you what else I've just seen, actually. The coloured box set pressings of the original ABBA vinyl, so before Voyage. Nice. Before Voyage, I would say that was another early purchase for me. All of the original, the 70s and 80s albums, studio albums of ABBA, got repressed onto colour.
Yeah.
Really good quality, or certainly my version was really good quality. And yeah, because obviously they've released Voyage now, so Voyage has gone into the collections. So I had one of the original coloured ones, and I really like that one, so I'll give that one a shout out.
Yeah, no, I mean, have you seen Voyage, by the way, or Voyage, whichever way it was said?
I haven't. I'm so gutted, because I've been trying to get down there and I just haven't made it yet.
Dude, get yourself down. I saw it. I had it as a birthday present gift from my parents. We all went together. Oh,
okay.
Wow. It's honestly, A, you feel like watching the future of music, if we're going to be honest. Yeah. And B, it looks so good and it's so incredible. And like, get the dance floor tickets if you do as well. Don't sit down, get the dance floor and actually go there with some friends or family, whoever, and just have a dance whilst it's on as well, because that's what really makes it. And also, I'm not going to lie, because it's when I went, and I don't know if there's a reason for it. It might have been because it was FA Cup final day when I went, which might make a difference. Because obviously a lot of people are going to be preoccupied with that. But it was predominantly a female audience, which is good. So as someone who's a short man, I could see for once, because like, everyone was shorter than me. And it's actually predominantly, I would say, it's people above the age of 40 plus as well. So starting to shrink a little, you know. I'm joking, of course, but the audience was quite short as well, so I could see really easy.
Am I allowed to ask how tall you are?
That's what I am. I'm 5'6", just under.
Okay.
5'6", so I'm quite short. So, okay. So for me, it's it was one of the best views I've ever had at a concert. Honestly, it was so good. I was so happy.
Excellent.
But anyway, James, we shall leave it there, because it's been a fantastic conversation, and I'm really glad you came on the podcast, because it's always great to have people from the vinyl community. It's at Perfectly Pop, isn't it, on Instagram?
It is. Yep.
Yeah. Excellent. Perfect. Everyone, go follow James.
Thank you so much.
Great account, and you will love it and really enjoy it. He's got loads of records. Obviously, he's got loads more to show off as well with his large collection. And he's constantly buying, I assume, as well.
Or I have to get lots of people to buy them me as gifts for Christmas, birthdays, just breathing and existing in their life. So, and hopefully winning some of those competitions on Instagram that usually just go to people's friends anyway. So
I know. Anyway, everyone just go follow anyway, because he's got a great account, and I've really enjoyed having you on, James. You're always welcome to come back on the pod and chat some more. Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
No worries. Okay. Have a good day.
You take care. Thank you. Bye-bye. Cheers.